The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hands off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? No. Hey, listen to this.
Cursing, cussing, swearing, and all I could think of was shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits.
The one and only George Carlin. Were he alive today, could he still pack a venue? I wonder. I just went to see a college production of Grease. Grease, one of the most successful Broadway shows ever. 3,388 performances in its original run, making it the most unbeaten show of its time. And since then, movies and endless road tours and revivals, this thing has probably thrown off in the billions of receipts. And this was a college production, not grammar school, not high school. And before the show begins, someone comes out on stage and informs the audience that some of the dialogue and lyrics have been changed so as to ensure they are not inappropriate. Inappropriate? For who? Now, as you know, on this show, we hate commies, because commies have been responsible for more death and suffering than any single group on Earth. Period. That's a stone fact. And a favorite word of commies is inappropriate. Inappropriate says, I don't like what you said. And since I lack the balls or the power or the authority to silence you, I'll try to do it by shaming you like you're a fucking toddler or a cocker spaniel. Because the first way to control somebody is to control their speech. Which is why my initial reaction to people who use and overuse the word inappropriate is, go fuck yourself, then eat shit, and die. But back to Grease. It ran on Broadway for thousands of performances, and nobody thought it was inappropriate then. But then was 1971 through 1980, and the American public had yet to have its balls and ovaries and brains zapped by cultural Marxist mores. Sure, with a good overlay of nanny statism and some infantilization, but I guess it all springs from the same fountain of madness, the meddlesome matriarchy. Because as brutal and fucked as commie regimes are, they are indubitably matriarchies, not patriarchies, even when led by dudes. Because their social contract is, mommy, the state, will take care of you children. Don't try to make it on your own. Stick with the training wheels we give you and the crumbs we feed you. Here's a big communal tit. Suck hard. Those of us who love and treasure free speech have to start asking questions of the inappropriate crowd. And the first question is, why are you anti-free speech? That one stops them cold. They sputter, they stammer, they don't know what to say. And if they can muster a response, you'll hear a lot of mum-mum-mum-zum-mum-mum-mum, which, of course, is smoked green bullshit, because there is no gray area here. It's an either-or, yes, no, black, white, dead or alive issue. You either have free speech or you don't. Ever notice how deceitful scumbags can never answer a challenge with brevity? Look at these lying fuckballs in academia, in politics, in the government bureaucracy. When asked the simplest of questions, they never give a simple answer, do they? They love to preface with, well, it's a complex issue with many layers and nuances. Bullshit. So what they do is fabricate layers of falsehood to support their lying agenda. And when we let them spew that shit unanswered, they advance their schemes just a little bit more. That's the way they operate, incrementally. They rarely make any bold or big moves. They just slowly ratchet their way into power when the people aren't paying close attention or they're too naive or ignorant to know they are being conned. When George Carlin recorded his seven words routine, his biggest fans were college students. Would they even let George near a campus now, unless he cleaned up his inappropro language? How the fuck have we allowed these imbeciles to dictate to us what we can and cannot hear and now say? Where did this shit begin? The new American Puritanism. But in some bizarre twist, they never seem concerned about obscenity, only coarse language or profanity. The same assholes who complain about people using curse words have subscriptions to Pornhub. Kind of a disconnect there, no? Little stupid hall monitors running around with a whistle around their necks passing out demerit cards. The original Puritans fled to America to escape others who didn't like their flavor of Christianity, but to show how history distorts the truth. The Puritans now represent sexual repression, don't they? Puritanical is an antonym to hedonistic. But their name had nothing to do with sex. What they wanted to purify was the Protestant religion, which they believed was still too close to Catholicism. In truth, the Puritans were quite a lusty bunch. They actually kicked a new husband out of the neighborhood when his bride complained that he was unwilling to consummate their marriage. How about that? But the world has always been plagued by fuckballs, even before commies were invented. People who just want to tell everybody else what to do and how to do it. And these assholes are successful an alarming amount of the time. Back in 1919, a small minority of assholes, but extremely vocal and organized and driven assholes, decided none of us were grown up enough to handle beer, wine, or booze, so they banned it. There's another word douchebags are in love with, banned. A few years back, one of the corner office centimillionaire creeps at Facebook tried to increase her Q scores by mounting a campaign called Let's Ban Bussy. Her name is Sheryl Sandberg, and Sandberg thinks the word bossy has connotations that reflect negatively on women in the workplace. Well, okay, Sheryl. When a male boss is overbearing and a pain in the ass, people tend to call him, that fucking asshole or shit for brains. Seems preferable to the femme version, bossy, doesn't it? But if you really feel that way, I'll suggest your employees just call you fucking asshole too. There. Do you feel more equal now, Sheryl? Good. Now you don't have to ban anything. Go have a cookie. So in 1919, the I want to tell you what to do group of assbags and pissants decided that since some people could not handle alcohol, nobody should have alcohol. And typical of morons with a twisted agenda, what's the first thing they do? They give their scheme a deceptive name that is light years away from its true nature. And the one they chose was temperance. What the fuck does that mean? Well, it's a synonym for control. And what do they really want to control? People. Those meddlesome pieces of shit knew that if they were honest about naming their agenda, calling it, say, let's outlaw alcohol, they would not have had the slightest chance of success. But call it a name nobody understands, and look what happens. Success, plus rampant crime, the growth of the mafia in the U.S., and an ever-swelling prison population of people locked up simply because they wanted a cold beer. So their outfit was called the Women's Christian Temperance Union. Now there's some four-barrel bullshit for you. In just one little name, they made it about women, God, and unions. And that outfit spawned the Department of Scientific Temperance Instruction, which was all over our schools and colleges. And their snappy motto was, do everything to protect women and children. And who could oppose that? And of course, these insidious shitbags always infiltrate education first, don't they? Because we adults are busy trying to make a living. But on the other hand, school kids' craniums are a bit less busy and tabula rasa. So they shoehorn their shitty messages into the curriculum, knowing full well that young, impressionable minds are easily wired. There's another red flag to look out for when meddlesome assholes are trying to put their foot on your throat. They almost always find a way to link it to children, don't they? Whatever misery they're selling, they tie it to saving the kids, just like Janet Sack of Shit Reno, who so loved the children she had to burn the children to death, 25 of them, plus their moms and dads. Oh, I'm so glad Janet's dead. It makes me giddy, really. Where do these assholes come from? They show themselves at a very young age, the student government pinheads, and they get power over us in adult life same as they did in school, because the rest of us just don't give a shit. And we have something going on in our lives. They, however, are devoid of talent or skill, so we regard them as jokes and clowns. And we don't pay attention, and we don't vote, and just a couple of decades roll by, and now those same student government assholes are deciding major elements of our lives, like how much we're taxed, or wars to involve us in, and whether they'll draft us or our kids, and so on. It's really fucking scary. Only those who do not seek power are qualified to hold it. That was said by Plato, the wise Greek, and he was right. Aren't the reluctant leaders, the ones who have leadership thrust upon them by others, always the best ones, as opposed to ambitious, conniving creeps who derive sexual satisfaction from the assumption of power? Temperance. Fuck temperance. That was a phony name for a sinister, fraudulent agenda, just as deceptively named as affordable health care or gun control. It's not about gun control. It's about people control. It's all achieved through lies, misleading terms for horrible ideas that power-mad fucks want to foist upon us. What does bullshit speech do to us? Well, let's give another listen to our friend George on how veterans get fucked over by dishonest language.
I don't like words that hide the truth. I don't like words that conceal reality. I don't like euphemisms or euphemistic language. And American English is loaded with euphemisms because Americans have a lot of trouble dealing with reality. Americans have trouble facing the truth. So they invent a kind of a soft language to protect themselves from it. And it gets worse with every generation. For some reason, it just keeps getting worse. I'll give you an example of that. There's a condition in combat. Most people know about it. It's when a fighting person's nervous system has been stressed to its absolute peak and maximum, can't take any more input. The nervous system has either snapped or is about to snap. In the First World War, that condition was called shell shock. Simple, honest, direct language, two syllables, shell shock. Then a whole generation went by, and the Second World War came along, and the very same combat condition was called battle fatigue. Four syllables now. Takes a little longer to say. Doesn't seem to hurt as much. Fatigue is a nicer word than shock. Shell shock. Battle fatigue. Then we had the war in Korea, 1950. Madison Avenue was riding high by that time. And the very same combat condition was called operational exhaustion. Hey, we're up to eight syllables now. And the humanity has been squeezed completely out of the phrase. It's totally sterile now. Operational exhaustion. Sounds like something that might happen to your car. Then, of course, came the war in Vietnam. Thanks to the lies and deceit surrounding that war, I guess it's no surprise that the very same condition was called post-traumatic stress disorder. Still eight syllables, but we've added a hyphen. And the pain is completely buried under jargon. Post-traumatic stress disorder. I'll bet you, if we'd have still been calling it shell shock, some of those Vietnam veterans might have gotten the attention they needed at the time. I'll bet you that.
What's a hate crime? aren't all violent crimes hate crimes? All the term hate crime does is elevate one group defined by ethnicity or sexual preference, or hell, it could be people who like the Dodgers instead of the Angels. But what it does is make one group more valuable in the eyes of the law than another. What happened to equal protection under the law? That's in the Constitution. But if some poor bastard of no particular heritage or declared sexual flavor gets beaten by a mugger, should his attacker get less punishment because the victim is ordinary in every way? How many times do we hear on news reports that the police are treating some event as a, quote, hate crime, unquote? Does that mean they'll be working harder to find the criminal? Do idiot lawmakers think that some asshole in a homicidal rage is going to think twice about stabbing or shooting or beating someone because their victim is a member of a protected group? Hate crime legislation hasn't made anybody of any race or sexual preference or disability one bit safer. But it's given loads of phony, parasitic, gasbag politicians something to crow about. And now we've got hate speech, whatever that is. And all over the world, people are going to jail for so-called hate speech. India has big penalties for whatever they deem is hate speech. And folks, there is a shit ton of latitude built into those laws which can get you up to 3 years in jail, including making insulting comments about a person's place of birth. I wonder what qualifies. Calling someone a bastard from Bangalore? A Mumbai motherfucker? You know, this is coming to the United States sooner than later. Call someone a California flake, or an obnoxious New Yorker, or an Okie, or a cheesehead, or any of dozens of slurs about people's places of birth, and bam, prison time. This is real, folks. And where is it percolating? Well, in Berkeley, of course, where, quote, hate speech can't be protected if it incites illegal activity, causes someone to feel imminent fear for their safety, or creates a hostile environment, unquote, says Erwin Chemerinsky, dean of UC Berkeley's School of Law. Wow, Erwin, there is a lot of elasticity in your statement there, little man, especially in that last phrase, creates a hostile environment. What exactly could that mean, Cupcake? Hostile environment might be one where somebody doesn't agree with you. Or maybe, as they speak, they narrow their eyes and give you a dirty look. And that's kind of hostile, isn't it, Precious? Better call the cops and press charges, right, Erwin? Maybe this last wave of speech suppression began 30 years ago with an idiot named Tipper Gore. Yes, that would be Mrs. Al Gore, ex-wife of the Greeniac con artist, who demands we all reduce our carbon footprint while he owns multiple mansions, fleets of gas-guzzling SUVs, and rides his big, fat, candy ass around in private jets all the time. I find Al Gore so reprehensible, I wrote a song about him. Actually, the song was a promotional device for a book I wrote about his bogus movement. The book was stillborn due to some heinous fuckery. Maybe I'll do a show about that sometime. Anyway, here's my musical hate letter to Al Full of Shit Gore.
In the winter it snows, in the autumn leaves blow, and the measure of people like pizza to go. Zippers get stuck, riders get thrown, and Keith's still the best Rolling Stone. But the climate is not a-changing. The buildings got taller and the cars they got small, and the city of Berlin is minus a wall. The TV's got wider and Main Street's a mall, and the pawnbroker's still got three balls, but the climate is not changing. Al Gore says our days, they are numbered like cards, and soon we'll be drowning in our own backyards. The ice caps will melt and the planet will warm, and we must cap and trade and do as he says and stop driving big shiny cars. But the climate is not changing. Al, please take your Nobel and hockey stick charts, and your Oscar in limos and greenhouse gas farts, your junk science, carbon credits, and massage parlor tarts. Shove your prophesied doom and your verbal monsoons and your books full of half-truths and lies, for the climate is not a-changing. The lines have been drawn and the battle is planned, and his minions, they march for the easy green man who sits in his mansions on a throne with a tan, with a private jet at his command. He says, do as I say, but not as I do. But the climate is not a changing. No, the climate is not a changing. No, the climate is not a changing.
There's a video that goes along with the song. I'll post it at thatlarryshow.com. By the way, when Al Gore left the office of vice president, his net worth was well under $1 million. Today, he is worth an estimated $200 to $300 million. How the fuck does a retired politician amass a fortune like that? Could he be peddling influence? Makes you wonder, doesn't it? By the way, George Carlin also saw right through Al Gore's lies. Just listen to this.
And the greatest arrogance of all, save the planet. What? Are these fucking people kidding me? Save the planet? We don't even know how to take care of ourselves yet. We haven't learned how to care for one another. We're gonna save the fucking planet? I'm getting tired of that shit. Tired of that shit. Tired. I'm tired of fucking Earth Day. I'm tired of these self-righteous environmentalists, these white bourgeois liberals who think the only thing wrong with this country is there aren't enough bicycle paths. People trying to make the world safe for their Volvos. Besides, environmentalists don't give a shit about the planet. They don't care about the planet. Not in the abstract, they don't. Not in the abstract, they don't. You know what they're interested in? A clean place to live. Their own habitat. They're worried that someday in the future they might be personally inconvenienced. Narrow, unenlightened self-interest doesn't impress me. Besides, there is nothing wrong with the planet. Nothing wrong with the planet. The planet is fine. The people are fucked. Difference. Difference. The planet is fine.
So Tipper, Al's moron ex-wife, back when Al was a mere senator, decided to raise her Q scores on the back of rock and roll. She formed an outfit called the PMRC. That was the Parents Music Resource Center. Again, typical of a meddlesome phony, she comes up with a bullshit camouflage name for her sleazy agenda. What the fuck does Parents Music Resource Center mean? Is that a place where mommy and daddy can get tunes for the kiddies? No, it was a thinly veiled attempt to censor music lyrics. Actually, Tipper's little scam checked three boxes that reveal a phony asshat. One, she claimed to be protecting children. Two, she gave her outfit a deceptive name. And number three, she went after an easy target, entertainers. She actually came up with a shit list, which she termed the Filthy 50. And that list included Prince, Motley Crue, AC/DC, Def Leppard, and Cyndi Lauper, among others. Tipper and the PMRC wanted to label recordings that they decided were offensive to children. And a lot of artists fought back, like John Denver, Dee Snider, and Frank Zappa. Zappa said, quote, "The PMRC proposal is an ill-conceived piece of nonsense which fails to deliver any real benefits to children, infringes the civil liberties of people who are not children, and promises to keep the courts busy for years dealing with the interpretation and enforcement problems inherent in the proposal's design. Bravo, Frank. Zappa's statement might also lend itself to the never-ending war on drugs, no? Trillions have been spent on it and will continue for the duration of our country, because now hundreds of thousands of government jobs depend on its continuance. People, since the dawn of time, have found ways to get high, and they always will. And on the flip side, those who have no interest in drugs do not develop an interest in them just because they are available. How many guys are, or were, rotting in jail on marijuana beefs, and now it's legal in, what, 30 states? What does the government have to say to those guys? Just kidding. And speaking of take no shit, as regular listeners know, that is the mission, the raison d'etre of this show, which is recorded live at the Take No Shit Dojo, right here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. And we're thinking about adding a new feature. Pittons. That's profiles in Take No Shit. There are incredible stories out there of people who refuse to take shit, and telling their stories is a great way to inspire and fire up all of us. So let me know what you think of that idea. And as an added dimension, perhaps you or someone you know has a kick-ass tale of take no shit. Send it to me, and maybe we'll stitch it right into the show. Email me at thatlarryshow@gmail.com. Follow the show on Twitter at thatlarryshow. Join the dojo at patreon.com/thatlarryshow for bonus content, signed books, and custom recordings. Oh yeah, and when you're over at thatlarryshow.com, don't forget to click the subscribe by email button. It costs nothing, but that way you'll never miss an episode. My friends, thanks so much for hanging with me once again. There is a war on free speech, and if they win, we're all fucked. It is the single most important issue on the planet. So when they try to shut you down with, "That's inappropro," or "That's offensive," the reflexive action is, go fuck yourself. But the far, far more powerful retort is, why do you oppose free speech? That will leave them speechless and put them on notice that you are no one to fuck with. I'll see you next Tuesday, and until that time, take no shit.